Stephen Sewell is one of Australia's premier playwrights. His latest play, with the wonderful title Myth, Propaganda and Disaster in Nazi Germany and Contemporary America, and that's the cut-down version, has now won more awards than any other play in Australian history. Stephen, welcome to Theatre Voice.
Well, thank you very much, Philip.
This is an amazing play. It takes on Iraq, it takes on all kinds of issues, and you base it around Franz Kafka's The Trial, not to mention 1984, a bit of McCarthyism, etc. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the play, please?
The play is about an Australian academic who is living in New York. He's married to an American. He's a kind of burnt-out case at the beginning of the play, he's written a small monograph. And the monograph is called Myth, Propaganda and Disaster in Nazi Germany and Contemporary America, a Comparative Study. And he begins to be visited by a strange and threatening figure who becomes increasingly threatening and bashes him. And as the play progresses, it becomes more and more nightmarish for this Australian. His name's Talbot. And part of the nightmare for Talbot is that nobody else, apart from him, can actually see this figure. So nobody believes that this is happening to him. It's a kind of brilliant minds in reverse. Finally, Talbot has just disappeared and murdered. So the play is a contemporary play. It's set in the contemporary world. It's set in a world of these very violent attacks that are taking place both on nations and on the rights and liberties of individuals.
Do you consider yourself in that case to be entirely a political playwright? Is it just this play?
I'm not. I'm a writer. I've been writing for 30 years. People frequently call me a political playwright, and I don't mind been called that. I'm interested in politics. I'm interested in power. Power is as soon as you've got two human beings in a relationship, you've got elements of power being played out. So I see power as being the central kind or a central aspect of human experience, and because it's a central aspect of human experience, it's absolutely valid and important and crucial that that writers write about it and write about those elements of it. I think the ancient Greeks had a word for plays that did not have political elements, and that word is connected to our word idiot.
So you definitely call yourself a political playwright in that case.
Yes, well, I hope so. I've got to say, you know, like, just because you're a political playwright doesn't mean you're not an idiot either.
Have you had a chance to see any of the other political plays on in London at the moment? David Hare's Stuff Happens, Guantanamo, any of the others?
No, I haven't. Some of those plays are coming to Australia. What's remarkable to me... Well, it's not remarkable, it's really kind of heartening. To know that especially the English writers, and you kind of expect the English writers, but I mean the American writers as well, are all kind of rising to this, to what really is a sort of a crisis in our democracies, and I feel very proud to be part of that company.
I think you should do. Certainly personally, I think Myth is one of the most powerful pieces on the subject at the moment, which is a great compliment when there are so many going on. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your other work?
As I mentioned, Philip, I've been a writer for 30 years. Some of your listeners might actually be familiar with my writing. I wrote a very famous Australian a film. Called The Boys, that David Wenham and Tony Collette were in. That was a few years ago, 1998. I've had many plays produced here in the UK. The last play I had here wasn't a straightforwardly political play. It was called The Secret Death of Salvador Dali. That's been done at Edinburgh and here at the Riverside and the Old Red Lion here in London. I feel power and politics are very kind of crucial elements of human experience, and not just the contemporary experience, but of course the entirety of human experience. I mean, Aristotle called define human beings as political animals. But I'm also, as I kind of indicated about Salvador Dali, interested in artists and the life of artists. I guess because as I've become older, I've become more interested in the question of representation and how things are represented by other artists. So, for example, I'm going back to Australia shortly to begin rehearsals on a major play about the English painter Francis Bacon that'll be in the Sydney Festival in January.
To continue, I'm very interested in the relationship between Australian theatre and the rest of the world. It's not particularly noticeable that over here that anything is going on in Australia. Clearly, we see plays, David Williamson's play starring Madonna. Up for Grabs is one that everyone will know. But beyond that, they may struggle to mention a couple more. Australian film has been particularly successful, the likes of Bruce Beresford and many others. Mm. And I suppose Nicole Kidman possibly has helped that. But it just seems odd that there must be loads of great playwrights in Australia, and we don't really hear so much about that over here. Can you explain it? Is it just geography? Because these days, surely that shouldn't matter.
You're quite right, Philip. Australia's artistic contribution to the world, I don't know if it's incommensurate with its size. We have 19 million people in Australia, but many of the internationally known actors, directors, artists of one sort or another are Australian, but not so many of the writers. We do have many, many fine writers in Australia, especially in the last few years. There's been a big kind of upsurge in the development of writers and new writers coming on deck. And I mean, obviously, like great writers like Louis Naro and John Romerell from the past, and as you mentioned, David Williamson. But new writers like Daniel Keane, Joanna Murray Smith. Names escape me, you know, but they're terrific writers, and like writers throughout the world are kind of very concerned about dissecting the human heart and the human heart as its experience in Australia. We in Australia, of course, have many unique difficulties and dilemmas. When I mentioned to, I was in Ireland. And the reason I'm here in Europe, the reason I was able to come here was that in the first instance, Myth, Propaganda, and Disaster received a presentation in Ireland at the Dublin Arts Festival. So I arrived from Sydney at Dublin to do that. And of course, Dublin is, I don't know if it's the rain capital of the world, but you know, it's not a dry place. And so when I told them that it hadn't rained in my where I was for 4 years, the people looked at me like they didn't actually know what I was talking about. But that's true. Australia is suffering from this incredibly frightening drought, an extensive drought throughout the whole of the nation. The whole of the country that I just read today is now being absolutely ascribed to the global warming, and with a new report that's just come out stating that parts of Australia will within 20 or 30 years be uninhabitable. So we're kind of, I don't know if you'd say we're in the firing line. But we're certainly kind of close to the front of global change, with a government that that's in absolute denial about it. You probably know, for example, that Australia is one of there's only two countries in the world really left, the United States and Australia, who have not signed the Kyoto Agreement. So the general population is being told to prepare for the worst, but not being given any explanation about why it's happening. That's a terrible position for a citizen to be in, but it's a fantastic position for a dramatist to be in.
While your characters in Myth are pretty dismissive of the American government, regarding it rather as sinister, the Australian government, they really just laugh at. Is that you coming out?
Well, I think the Australian government is laughable, and I think it's renowned for being laughable. The Prime Minister, John Howard, described Australia as America's deputy sheriff in the Pacific. He is a laughing stock in the Pacific region. He has made our nation a complete farce. The statements of support for the Iraq war that came from the Australian government were used exactly the same terminology, exactly the same words as the Americans did when they were saying it. It was kind of like we didn't actually need a Department of Foreign Affairs. We just needed a big loud speaker connected to the White House. I have nothing but contempt for the Australian government.
That's a nice, powerful statement. Do I take it from that possibly you identify pretty closely with the protagonist Talbot Finch in Myth?
Well, I hope it doesn't. What happens to him doesn't happen to me. But on the other hand, I'm not prepared to kind of. Well, I feel that the circumstances are now so dire that really it is up to everybody to squawk as loudly as they can before we're shut up forever.
That is pretty chilling stuff. You feel as strongly as that about it? The play isn't just done for sort of effect and to entertain and to redo the trial. You believe that the world could be coming to a close?
Well, I read in the front page of the New York Times today that a purge is taking place of the CIA by the new Bush administration, because the Bush administration believes the CIA is full of liberals. So if that's... I mean, I think that's kind of frightening news.
I would imagine that probably everyone does. Where do you go from here? When was Myth actually written?
It was written about 18 months ago, just before the war in Iraq started. The war was being prepared, but it hadn't been launched.
And have you written anything since, or have you got things lined up to write?
Since then, I've written two plays. One called It Just Stopped, which will be produced in October in Sydney. That's a comedy set at the end of the world. One of the characters says, "You got to laugh, otherwise you'll cry." And the other one, as I mentioned, is a play on Francis Bacon called Three Furies. That's at the Sydney Festival this year. I have no doubt that both of those plays will be seen in London.
What's your background? You said you've been writing for 30 years. Is that full time?
Yes. The first 10 years I earned not a cent. But what I'd learnt in that first few years was that if you're going to make a living, you've got to write really fast. So I learned how to write quite quickly and not to be too precious about it. Like I don't regard theatre writing or the writing that I do as literature.
Let me ask some questions about working over in England. I take it that you've enjoyed working with Sam Walters, who, as you say, is a very experienced director at the Orange Tree, and I think putting the play on the round has been really interesting. It really draws the audience in. Presumably you've enjoyed working with him. Also, Jonathan Guy Lewis, who is an amazing star as Talbot, and David Rintoul, who plays the rather sinisterly titled The Man.
Yes. Oh, they've just been wonderful, and the experience has been one of the most delightful experiences I've ever had. Sam is a very witty, gentle person, I'd open the rehearsal room door to go in, and I'd start laughing, and I wouldn't stop laughing until we closed the door at the end and I left. People say sometimes, drama is fun, comedy is serious, and I think that's generally true, but it's been a really wonderful experience working with the English people here, and also seeing how deep the craft of the English actors is, they're just kind of very deep in their characterisation is very deep, their knowledge is very deep, and all of the actors, including Jonathan and David, have just been total delights to work with.
Has the play developed while it's been over here, or has it stayed as was when it left Australia?
No, we've had line changes. One of the things, of course, that we were all thinking about was that we began rehearsal before the United States election. So the question in everyone's mind was, how would people's perception and understanding of the play and change if the United States government had changed? And my personal feeling was that, you know, if anything in the play was true, was a proper kind of account of what was going on in the contemporary world, then a change at the top like that would not affect the depths of the essence of the play, that the Homeland Security would still exist, the Patriot Act would still exist, there would the prisoners in Guantanamo would still be there. So I didn't think that there would be a major rewrite that was necessary, but of course the government, George Bush, won the election, and I did add a line to the man. The man now says, he's playing the George Bush speech, the Axis of Evil speech, and he said, in the old script he said, I like this speech too. In the new script he says, I like this speech too. 4 more years. And on the night, on the opening night when we played that, when he did that, the entire audience squirmed.
How are you finding the audience at the Orange Tree? How did you end up with Sam to start with? But did he bring you across? And how are you finding the audience? Because it's not exactly the traditional young left-wing trendy audience that you might ideally like for your plays.
Sam got the play because a friend of his sent it from a New Zealand friend, actually, sent it from Australia, and he told him that he had to do the play. The audience, the very first time that I saw the audience was with the previous Orange Tree production, Summer Again, and I was quite startled that they looked a very mature audience, and wondered what they'd make of Myth Propaganda, and Sam was very kind of concerned himself, so he put up all these warning signs all over the place, you know, that it, quoting from the play, that if you find any of this stuff offensive, you know, you don't come. But in the event, I saw a matinee, or I didn't see it, but I went to a meeting, like a question and answer, after the matinee on Thursday, and there were some quite elderly people there, and what amazed me really was a friend that I was with who was visiting. She came from Ireland to see the production, and both of us were very impressed by the seriousness with which the audience dealt with the issues of the play, and their own very deep knowledge of history, because being elderly people, like one of the chaps was saying, well, I remember in the 30s, and I was just amazed, you know, that here in that auditorium there were people in whose living memory some of the events that were being referred to in this play had a direct experience of, who was saying yes, these are dangerous times.
I think one final question. You said you spent the first 10 years of your writing career doing it full time and not earning any money. I'm dying to know, how come you're still alive?
Oh, well, you know, people find all sorts of little tricks, don't they, to get what they want. I'm just sort of grateful or fortunate, or I'm grateful and fortunate that at the end of that I was able to have learnt my craft and earned a position in Australian theatre, where I was able to start making a living, and because people wanted to hear my voice, and they want, and they, well, that's so untrue. It's because I think why people want to go to the theatre is that they want an experience of the human heart. They want to know what their heart conceals from themselves, and I think that we get that in theatre. And I'm one of those writers who is absolutely dedicated to that view of theatre, and I think I give that to the audience, and I participate with the audience in discovering those things, and I think that's why I'm still here.
Stephen Sewell, I think that's a great place to finish. Thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you, Philip.